Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI.
Have you ever stopped to think how our best intentions, maybe even our purest ideals, could actually lead us down a really dark path, even towards things we might call sin?
It's a heavy question, isn't it?
It really is, and it's right at the heart of what we're diving into today, Dharamvir Harati's classic Hindi novel, Gunhan Ka Devta, which translates to The God of Sins.
A powerful title.
Absolutely. And this book, it's not just any novel. It's seen as a cornerstone of post-independence Indian literature, really enduring, but also, frankly, pretty controversial for its time and how it tackled love and morality.
Oh, definitely. You have to remember, Bharati wrote this in 1949. He was only 23.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And it's this semi-autobiographical psychological romance. It just broke new ground. Imagine the reaction back then, you know, from more conservative readers, this raw look at love, sexuality, moral ambiguity. Mm. It was shocking.
I can imagine.
But that boldness, that's precisely what cemented its status. It became this foundational text in modern Indian literature because it pushed boundaries,
right,
asked questions that honestly still resonate.
And that's our goal today, right? To kind of cut through the noise and really dig into the intense human drama here. We're looking at these characters who are sort of caught between tradition and modernity,
mm-hmm,
and exploring the profound, sometimes uncomfortable questions the book raises about love, duty, what it means to be human. It's a journey into a paradox, really. Okay, so let's unpack this literary gem.
Let's do it.
First off, Dharamvir Bharati himself. I mean, what a figure in modern Hindi literature. He wasn't just a novelist. He was a poet, a playwright, a critic. A real multifaceted talent.
Absolutely. He was central to the Naya Kavita, the new poetry movement, and also Naya Kahani, the new story movement.
Right.
His work consistently explored those existential struggles, you know, that tension between what an individual wants and what society expects, especially within the educated middle class in India as it was changing so rapidly.
Mm-hmm. And Gunhan Ka Devta is just such a perfect example of that focus, wouldn't you say?
Completely. It's set in Allahabad, or Prayagraj, as it's called now, back in the 1940s, mm-hmm, a very academic, very culturally rich setting.
Okay.
And the story revolves around Chander, who's this idealistic research student, and Sudha, the very vibrant daughter of his mentor, Professor Shukla.
Right, the mentor-student connection.
Exactly. And their bond, it starts out quite innocent, intellectual,
yeah,
you know, sharing books, ideas, a real meeting of minds. But, well, gradually, almost inevitably, it deepens into this passionate love. And crucially, a forbidden one.
Okay, and here's where it gets really interesting, and maybe a bit painful too. The core conflict isn't just about society saying no. It's internal for Chander, isn't it?
Deeply internal.
Just like agonizing tension between love and what he sees as his duty,
mm-hmm,
between desire and his own brand of morality.
Yeah. Chander's an orphan, remember? So Professor Shukla is like a father to him.
Right.
And because of that, he puts Sudha on this pedestal. He sees her as a divine being. He literally worships her from afar.
Which sounds romantic, but...
But it's the problem. He convinces himself their love is too sacred, too pure for something as, quote-unquote, conventional as marriage.
Oh, wow.
And this idea, this really flawed idealistic philosophy that becomes the novel's central sin. He genuinely believes marrying her would somehow tarnish her divinity. Like pulling a star down to earth.
It almost makes you wince, doesn't it, that idea?
It does, because
yeah,
elevating someone like that, it's not freedom, it's a cage. And you connect that to the title, The God of Sins.
It clicks.
Yeah, it becomes so meaningful. Bharati is asking, can our deepest devotion actually be our biggest downfall?
Mm-hmm.
The story forces these really uncomfortable questions, you know, about what sin even is, about social rules, about the cost of being emotionally honest or dishonest.
So the characters, especially Chander,
they effectively become gods of their own sins. They make choices based on their own sort of warped logic, noble intentions maybe in their own minds,
but ultimately destructive.
Exactly. Defying norms, yes, but leading straight to tragedy.
So let's look closer at these gods, these characters. Chander, the protagonist, he starts off so idealistic, right? Mm. Sensitive, philosophical.
Brimming with ideas.
But his path is this painful slide from that moral certainty into, well, real ethical confusion. And it's all driven by this idealized love for Sudha.
That's the engine.
His fatal flaw is just that inability, that complete block when it comes to reconciling this spiritual, almost heavenly love with the actual messy human reality of marriage. He thinks marrying her lowers her status.
It's a worship, like you said, but a worship that builds walls. It becomes her prison.
Mm-hmm. And then there's Sudha. What a character, especially for that time in Hindi literature.
Truly remarkable. She's intelligent, she's cheerful, full of life, and she loves Chandra deeply.
But her love is different.
Completely. It's straightforward. She wants a normal human life with him, a partnership.
Not worship.
Not worship. But, and her journey is just heartbreaking. She's caught, you see, between her duty as a wife, she marries Pami, who's sometimes called Kailash, and her own deep emotional and intellectual needs. Needs that, really. Only Chandra seemed to understand or fulfill.
She's this vibrant person just slowly fading.
Extinguished by a love that Chandra keeps purely in the abstract. Mm. And what's so powerful is how her character, even subtly, pushes back against those traditional ideas of female virtue. She's asserting her right to be emotionally fulfilled, even when society boxes her in.
And what about Pami or Kailash? Sudha's husband. He was Chandra's friend first, right?
Yeah, initially a close friend, which makes it all the more poignant because Pami is, by all accounts, a genuinely good man, loyal, trusting.
Just decent.
Exactly. Which makes the emotional betrayal he experiences, even if Sudha doesn't intend it maliciously, just devastating. His tragedy is his conventionality, maybe. His love is good, but it's perhaps unimaginative.
It doesn't reach her on that deeper level.
Precisely. Not because he's bad, but because he just doesn't see or maybe can't understand those deeper needs she has. It's a stark reminder, isn't it, that sometimes basic goodness isn't enough to bridge certain gaps.
Yeah, that's a tough point.
It really raises that question. How can pure goodness, like Pammy's, become a kind of tragic limitation in relationships? It shows good intentions aren't always enough when there's that fundamental incompatibility.
And then there are those other women Chandra gets involved with later.
Right, briefly. There's Binti, gentle, traditional, the woman he gets engaged to. And then another character, also named Pami, who's more modern, and he has an affair with her.
But neither relationship works out.
No, they're just these desperate, ultimately hollow attempts by Chandra to find some kind of solace after Sudha marries. They just underscore how emotionally unavailable he is. He can't connect. He's like a ghost in his own life.
Okay, so how does this all unravel? How does this beautiful but obviously flawed relationship fall apart? It starts well, doesn't it? The golden days of innocence.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. At Professor Shukla's home, it's depicted as this little paradise, full of intellectual chat, shared jokes, books, and that unspoken love between Chandra and Sudha just simmering beneath the surface.
A kind of perfect bubble.
A perfect fragile bubble. They seem to exist in this beautiful harmony, untouchable.
But then comes the turning point.
Then comes the fateful decision, the original sin. Professor Shukla, he sees their bond. He's not blind. And he encourages them to marry. It makes sense. It's what Sudha secretly wants.
But Chandra.
Chandra refuses. He's trapped in his ideal. He argues their connection is too divine, too pure for the mundane act of marriage. Marrying her would, in his view, demote him from her worshiper to just her husband.
That's painful logic.
It is. And he frames it as this noble sacrifice. Sudha, heartbroken, actually accepts his reasoning. She tragically mistakes his flawed thinking for some kind of profound wisdom.
And that decision sets everything else in motion.
Directly. It leads straight to Sudha's marriage and the shattering of paradise. Sudha marries Pama Kailash, as arranged. For Chandra, watching her leave, it's like a funeral.
His world collapses.
Completely shattered. He's plunged into this abyss of guilt, loneliness, and the realization hits him like a ton of bricks. In trying to preserve this abstract ideal, he's destroyed both their lives, that pedestal he built. It became her prison cell.
And what happens to Chandra then?
Well, that's his descent and search for meaning. He's haunted by Sudha. He becomes this wanderer in his own existence, totally out of sync. He tries finding redemption, maybe, through other women.
Binti and the other Pami.
Right. He gets engaged to Binti, maybe hoping for that conventional life. But he's emotionally numb, so it just adds more guilt. Then he fares with a modern Pami, exploring physical desire he'd suppressed with Sudha.
But no solace there either.
None. It just deepens his guilt, his self-loathing. He's desperately trying to fill this massive void that he himself created.
Which leads inevitably to tragedy.
The inevitable tragedy. Sudha, meanwhile, she's deeply unhappy in her marriage. Pami is kind, yes, but that connection, that intellectual and emotional bond she had with the Chandra is just not there.
And she physically declines.
Yeah, she literally withers away. Heartbreak, illness. It's all tied together. News of her failing health gets back to Chandra, and his guilt becomes unbearable.
And the climax.
The climax is her death. In her last moments, she asks for Chandra. But in the cruelest possible twist, He arrives too late.
Oh, devastating.
Her death is the final, awful, irreversible consequence of his idealistic mistake.
And does he finally understand?
Standing there, facing the reality of it, yes, he achieves this terrible clarity. It's his final realization, this horrifying moment of self-awareness.
What does he realize?
He understands with absolute certainty that his purity, his devotion, his so-called sacrifice, it was all just monumental ego. He didn't protect her divinity. He sentenced her to death.
He wasn't her devotee.
He was her destroyer. And in that moment, he finally accepts the title. He is the Gunahan Kavdefta, the god of his own sins.
Wow. That's incredibly powerful and so bleak. So let's unpack that. What does it all mean? What are the big themes Parati wants us to wrestle with?
Well, a huge one is idealism versus reality, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Chandra's idealism isn't presented as noble. It's dangerous. It's destructive.
Right. Yeah.
It really forces you to ask, can love survive purely as an abstract idea? Or does it have to be grounded in, you know, messy, imperfect human reality?
And tied to that is the nature of sin and virtue.
Exactly. Ferrati just flips the script on sin. Chandra's sin isn't malice or greed. It comes from what he thinks is his greatest virtue, that devotion to Sudha's purity.
So can noble intentions lead to disaster?
That's the question. If those intentions are cut off from empathy, from real-world consequences, can they become a catastrophic moral failure? It seems so.
That challenge to conventional morality runs deep, and it twists how we see the sanctity and complexity of love itself.
It really does. We see so many kinds of love here.
Yeah.
Sudhu's straightforward human desire, Chandra's worshipful ideal, Binti's simple duty, the other Pammy's physical connection.
A whole spectrum.
And the novel seems to argue that no single definition fits. Trying to rigidly box love in or idealize it like Chandra does just destroys it. It's this tragic picture of what love can be and maybe what it shouldn't be.
And another key aspect is individual agency versus social convention, especially for Sudha.
Oh, absolutely. Her struggle is central. She's caught between society's expectations, be a good wife, daughter, and her own deep emotional needs. Her tragedy highlights the cost of those stifling conventions, particularly for women at that time.
There's also a heavy sense of guilt and consciousness.
All the main characters grapple with the moral weight of their choices. Chandra, most obviously, but Sudha, too, in her quiet suffering. That torment of self-awareness, or the lack of it until it's too late, is palpable.
And Parati's writing style helps bring this all out, right? The narrative style, is it first person?
It often feels like it's aligned very closely with Chandra's consciousness, even if technically third person sometimes. We get such intimate access to his thoughts, his justifications, his turmoil.
That psychological realism is key.
Absolutely. He takes you deep inside the characters' heads, exploring their complex, often contradictory motivations. You don't just read about Chandra's flawed logic. You feel how he arrives at it, which makes the tragedy even more personal.
And the symbolism. You mentioned Allahabad's rivers earlier.
Right. The sacred rivers, Ganga, Yamuna, they evoke ideas of purity, confluence, merging. But ironically, the story unfolds amidst moral confusion and separation.
Nature reflects emotion, too.
Yeah. The changing seasons often mirror the characters' inner states. Sunshine for the early days, gloom later on. Classic, but done so effectively. And Sudha herself, symbolized as a devta, a goddess, a symbol Chandra tragically takes literally.
And the ultimate irony
is Chandra himself. The man trying so hard not to sin against Sudha's purity commits the greatest sin of all by denying her humanity. His worship becomes her death sentence. He becomes the god of sins.
Are there specific lines or quotes that really capture these ideas?
Definitely. That title phrase itself, Hemaltekhan Deyateen. We are the gods of our own sins. It hammers home that idea of individual responsibility. Our choices create our moral reality.
They're powerful.
And there's kind of Kamarav, roughly. Love has no religion or no moral code. Mm. It suggests authentic feeling operates outside conventional rules, which is liberating but also dangerous for these characters.
Yeah, I see that.
And maybe not a direct quote, but that central image, the paraphrase we talked about. In trying to put Sudha among the stars, Chandra forgot she needed to walk on the earth. The pedestal he built for his goddess became her prison, and then her tomb.
That just sums it up perfectly, doesn't it? The destructive nature of his idealization.
It really does.
So this story, it really stays with you. The emotional impact is huge. Melancholy, loss. It makes you question your own ideas about love, about morality.
Definitely. Doesn't give you easy answers. There's no neat villain, no simple hero. The tragedy comes from the flaws of a man who loves, but loves unwisely. It forces you to grapple with uncomfortable truths.
What's the lasting impression, do you think?
I think it's a deeper appreciation for just how complex relationships are. It challenges simple moral labels. And it's this haunting meditation on regret, on choices you can't undo. It really can shift how you look at your own relationships, your own moral compass. It makes you consider the hidden costs of striving for some abstract purity.
And its relevance today seems clear.
Absolutely. It's a timeless warning, isn't it? Against intellectual pride, against sacrificing real human happiness for abstract ideas. The themes are universal love, duty, idealism, regret. They resonate across cultures, across time. It remains an essential read.
What a deep dive we've taken into Gunahan Kadavta, a story that really, really makes you reflect.
It leaves us with a profound question, doesn't it? In our own lives, when we pursue purity or ideal love, are we ever, maybe unknowingly, forging the very chains that bind ourselves and the people we care about most?
That's a thought to carry with you, a really crucial question to ask ourselves.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.